Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 66 from Canto 4, Chapter 8. Rajovacha Sutome Balako Brahman Straine na Karunatmana Nirvasita Panchavarshaha Sahamatra Mahan Kavihi Rajovacha Sutome Balako Brahman Sraine na Karunatmana Nirvasita Panchavarshaha Sahamatra Mahan Kavihi. Raja Uvacha. The king replied, Suttaha, son, me, my, Balakaha, tender boy, Brahman, my dear Brahmana, Srinena, one who is too addicted to his wife, Akaruna Atmana, one who is very hard of heart, and without mercy. Nirvasitaha is banished. Panchavarshaha, although the boy is 5 years old. Saha with Matra, mother, Mahan, great personality, Kavihi, devotee. Translation, the king replied, O best of the Brahmanas, I am very much addicted to my wife, and I am so fallen that I have abandoned all merciful behavior, even to my son who is only 5 years old. I have banished him with his mother, even though he is a great soul and a great devotee. Purport. In this verse, there are some specific words which are to be understood very carefully. The king said that since he was very much addicted to his wife, he had lost all mercy. That is the result of being too affectionate towards women. The king had two wives. The first wife was Suniti, and the second wife was Suruchi. He was too attached to the second wife, however, so he could not behave well with Dhruva Maharaj. That was the cause of Dhruva's leaving home to perform austerities. Although, as a father, the king was affectionate toward his son, he minimized his affection for Dhruva Maharaj because he was too much addicted to the second wife. Now he was repenting that both Dhruva Maharaj and his mother, Suniti, were practically banished. Dhruva went to the forest, and since his mother was being neglected by the king, she was therefore almost banished also. The king repented having banished his boy, for Dhruva was only 5 years old, and a father should not banish his wife and children or neglect their maintenance. Repentant over his neglect of both Suniti and her son, he was morose, and his face appeared withered. According to Manu Smriti, one should never desert his wife and children in a case where the wife and children are disobedient and do not follow the principles of home life. They are sometimes given up. But in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, This was not applicable because Dhruva was very mannerly and obedient. Moreover, he was a great devotee. Such a person is never to be neglected. Yet the king was obliged to banish him. Now, he was very sorry. So, there are a few verses before this one that are part of today's discussion, starting with 62. And 62 starts right after Narada's instructions to Dhruva about what he should do to find Vishnu. So he gives him a whole procedure and then gives him standards by which he should live his life. So text 62 is when Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, was thus advised by the great sage Narada. He circumambulated Narada, his spiritual master, and offered him respectful obeisances. Then he started for Madhuvan, which is always imprinted with the lotus footprints of Lord Krishna and which is therefore especially auspicious. After Dhruva entered Madhuvan forest to execute devotional service, the great sage Narada thought it wise to go to the king to see how he was faring within the palace. In other words, he knew. When Narada Muni approached, the king received him properly, offering him due respect, due obeisances. After being seated comfortably, Narada began to speak. The great sage Narada inquired, "My dear king, your face appears to be withering up. And you look like you've been thinking of something for a very long time. Why is that? Have you been hampered in following your path of religious rites, economic development, and sense gratification?" Purport. The four stages of advancement of human civilization are religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and for some, the stage of liberation. Narada Muni did not inquire from the king about his liberation, but only regarding the state of management, which is meant for advancement of the three principles, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, since those who engage in such activities are not interested in liberation. Narada did not inquire from the king about this. Liberation is meant for persons who have lost all interest in religious, ritualistic ceremonies, economic development, and sense gratification, which directly connects with yesterday's verse. I'll read that. If, this is Narada to Dhruva, be very focused, vyavasayatmika buddhi, stay with that, Dhruva. If one is very serious about liberation, he must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy, and he must certainly be aloof from all activities of sense gratification. Doesn't mean you don't sleep. It's the focus is upon one thing. Even the purpose of sleeping, one thing. The purpose of anything, one thing. To achieve the association, the happiness, the pleasure, the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's his advice to Dhruva. Because Dhruva already demonstrated he was qualified for that instruction. And Narada was very happy to give him that instruction. But he knew, because he's Narada, and however it is that Narada knows, Supersoul indicating to him, his father is devastated. Uttanapada was, one can only imagine, the situation, because of the insulting behavior of Suruchi, speaking cruelly and viciously and deliberately hurtful to Dhruva. And Dhruva turning to his father, and his father remaining silent, like no shelter over here. So because of that, Dhruva's gone. Imagine. 5-year-old boy, so hurt by being neglected, he's just gone. Now, there are hard-hearted people in this world that wouldn't even care. But Uttanapada, as Narada heard that Dhruva had left, certainly Uttanapada heard that Dhruva had left. And he's beating himself up like anything. Because of my attachment, excessive attachment to Suruchi, I didn't do anything. I didn't provide any shelter for my son. And he's gone. And who knows if he'll survive in the forest. One can only imagine how horrible Uttanapada was feeling. So Narada knew that, how he was feeling, and it was confirmed by seeing his physical condition. Prabhupada said so many times, the face is the index to the mind. There's a very nice section in which, in this canto later, where Narada is similarly describing to King Prachinibari that one just not only by the face, but by the limbs, by the senses, how the senses are engaged, one can tell something about the condition of the mind. So much of the examples of nectar devotion, of the stages of bhava, where different symptoms of bhava are exhibited physically. And so the physical manifestation is an exhibition of the mind, the state of the mind. So as it's true in ecstasy, it's also true in misery or material existence. Wonder, dread, joy. Different, like, what do they call those things? The little face that shows some expression of being sad and crying and happy and wonder and, you know, whatever they call those things. Huh?
Emoticons?
Yes, those. So it's just, you know, the face shows mind. That's the idea. So he saw the face of Uttanapada. You don't look so good. And even specifically, have you been pondering something for a very long time? Are your material affairs in disarray? So, but he, that's what Prabhupada says in the purport, but he says explicitly is your dharma, artha, kama, are they in disarray? Because persons who have interest in material affairs may very well be interested in religiosity with the aim of improving their material affairs. And it can be gross, it can be subtle, material affairs, gross meaning I want wealth, I want something, beauty, I want success in my business affairs, I want health, I want. Or it can be subtle in the sense of pride and prestige that I'm a such and such kind of a person and I do such and such things for other people and look at me. The labha, puja and pratishta in the Sanskrit terms. eager for the some distinction from others, for my being a good person, a religious person, a kind person, a charitable person. Even where that's not so, like, in your face, grossly blatant, unless one is fully purified to some degree, that's going to be there. That is, what's in it for me consciousness? How am I going to profit somehow by this religious activity or charitable activity or philanthropic activity or gesture of kindness activity? The expectation of something coming back. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings say that one should not expect something to come back. Whether something comes back or doesn't come back, if something comes back, the credit for that goes to the one who is engaged, bringing one into the position of devotional service. One doesn't receive some credit for oneself. One doesn't become discouraged because there isn't some credit coming. The happiness, like the Nishkam Karma Yoga verse of Bhagavad Gita, one of the primary ones, famous ones, Karma Nevadikaraste Ma Paleshu Kadachana. There's three do nots in that verse. There's one do. Perform your prescribed duty. Because you have the adhikar, you have the qualification for performing your prescribed duty. But do not be attached to the pala of your prescribed duty, the fruit of your prescribed work. Nor be attached to not performing your duty. That was Arjuna's program. So, what's the incentive? What's the propellant? What's the motivation for someone that doesn't want to become the enjoyer of the fruits of their work? Because everybody wants to do that. That's in this world, that's the nature of the place. So what their satisfaction is, satisfaction in rendering the service itself. Satisfaction in the quality of goodness is duty. Satisfaction in the quality of goodness is I'm becoming purified. Higher is the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead explicitly and exclusively, which is what Narada is teaching to Dhruva. But persons who are not on that platform, not capable of that platform, there's what's in it for me consciousness. And that means attached to the fruit, whether it's gross, like money or the work product, and being attached to producing that, or attached to the sense of I can do it and people appreciate me and da 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 da, the subtle. So it's rare, it's transcendental to have none of that. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. Savai punksang paro dharmo yatho bhakti arhoksaje ahai tukhi apratiyata yatma supraseedati. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. In fact, that verse is Sutta's statement, that's the essence of all the Vedas. But the essence of all the Vedas may be concealed by so many other intentions and practices that don't clearly spell out that's really what the goal is. So the Bhagavatam clearly spells out that's the goal. The king, in Narada's estimation, isn't even yet on the platform of aspiring for liberation. So he doesn't even ask about it. He just asks him about your Dharma, Artha, and Kama program. How's it going? Not going so well? Is that why you're lamenting? Some disturbance in there? So the king replies, from his response one can see he's learned. He's not just a totally insensitive person. That is to say, he's aware of where the problem is. Besides, he did something awful due to attachment. He's able to recognize that many people aren't able to recognize I'm attached. They don't recognize that, and therefore they're living and justifying without that understanding. And so they go on with the same program. He's recognizing by his sensitivity, by his better quality and qualification, I've been overly attached. And the result of being overly attached isn't good. Immediately what Prabhupada writes here is one loses mercy. There's another extended reference in the Bhagavatam about losing mercy, and that's pride. So pride and attachment, one loses mercy. Narada speaks about Nala Kuvera and Manigriva because they're proud. We're sons of Kuvera, and Kuvera is intimately connected with Lord Shiva, and we're his son, so we're cool. They were proud. And because Narada considers, because they're proud, they can do any cruel thing. And it's okay because I'm up here, anybody else is down there, and who cares? Pride. One can lose all sense of kindness, compassion. The quality of goodness is kindness and compassion. And pride destroys that. And attachment also destroys that. The psychology goes something like this. What's important is this attachment, the object of attachment and me and the object of attachment. And I'm ready to sacrifice anything to preserve and maintain and keep this attachment thing going. So how that affects other people, too bad. Mercy's gone because my attachment is, speaking like this, it's really graphic, it's obvious. Sometimes it's not so blatant and graphically obvious. But it goes on. Simply due to attachment. It goes on. And what to do? Because we're attached. And the answer that's given in the Bhagavatam is become attached to, in the third canto, Kapila Dev's teaching is become attached instead of to material objects and the enjoyment of those objects, become attached to saintly personalities. And in the association of saintly personalities, sadhu sangha, bringing happiness to the object, the sadhu. And one's material attachments, his advice, Kapila Dev's advice, is simply transfer, same attachment to sadhu sangha. Become attached to sadhu sangha. Yeah, well, what about my other attachments? Don't worry about that. They'll They'll have their place. You still do the things that you need to do because you need to do them, but without attachment. Then you can see them as they are. You can see yourself as you are. You can see reality. Transferring attachment doesn't mean you stop being a whole person or something like that. You artificially renounce all types of things because now I'm not attached to those things. You may utilize those things without attachment. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayuntitaha nirvanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya ujjate. One utilizes yukta vairagya. One utilizes things in the traditional language of commentary, pots and plates, meaning, you know, worldly things. So you utilize those worldly things without attachment. Because it's in service to Krishna, you utilize them in a very conscientious way. Your, whatever you have, your computer, or your desk, or, you know, your clothing, or whatever it is that you have, you utilize it very carefully because it's for Krishna's service. But not with attachment, but the attachment goes to Krishna and Krishna's service. Like that. And that leads to clarity. And it promotes the quality of mercy, specific to this discussion. He had, the king, Uttanapada, had two wives. Suniti was the first wife and elder wife, and Suruchi was the younger wife and second wife. And he didn't care for Suniti like he cared for Suruchi. So when Dhruva was offended and his father did nothing, he just burst out in tears, and a five-year-old boy went running for his mother. But where was his mother? Some distant place. And she said specifically, I'm in this distant place because your father doesn't even care for me. I don't know if you tell that to a five-year-old boy, that your father doesn't care for you, care for his mother. But she said that. And I have no influence over your father. There's nothing that I can do to help the situation because he doesn't care for me anyways. So what the king is saying here is, in effect, I banished my wife because of neglect. He didn't say, get out of the palace. I don't want you around here anymore. He just neglected her, so there was default. And, you know, these things go on because of attachment. Something, someone or something that's actually very worthy recipient of acts of kindness doesn't get any act of kindness because one is attached. And that's a sad situation. And he's feeling very sad about the sad situation. He's the perpetrator of this offense to his five-year-old son and to his wife. Or at least the first wife, Suniti. My heart has become so hard. I've become so cruel, so devoid of mercy, that I banished them. And he's so exalted. He's a great devotee. He's a pure soul. He's innocent. And I've just due to attachment. So we may get those realizations from time to time that we're too attached. And because we're too attached, we don't behave in the way that we know that we should and we want to. So search for Narada Muni when that happens, and or pick up your Bhagavatam and hear from the Bhagavatam what you should do. Now, in this particular situation, Narada tells the king in the coming verses the good news. Your son is going to become a perfect personality. He'll be okay. He's not going to be eaten by some tiger or wolf in the jungle. He's going to become a perfect person. And he'll come back. So be peaceful. His interest in returning was to relieve Uttanapada of his distress. So anyone who's a well-wisher of others will want to help people, not just feel good. Oh, you don't have to worry because he's not his body anyways, he's spirit soul, and even if a wolf eats him, he's spirit soul. No good. there has to be qualification in how to speak properly in different situations in such a manner that the consciousness of the individual becomes uplifted, not just they temporarily feel better. That's Narada's qualification. We're not Narada. We often become perplexed how to help, how to be of service, proper service in a given situation. But a starting point is to think like that. Not to think in terms of, I'm gonna fix the situation. Kartaham iti manyate. Not like that. But to be in a position of service in relation to the personality of Godhead. And then, for starters, we can see the situation transcendentally, more so than if we're still on the bodily platform of consciousness. And inspiration from Krishna can more readily come if we're transcendentally fixed. So there's many nice lessons in this whole story. There are two stories, two large topics in the Bhagavatam that are particularly well known, particularly famous and favorite of devotees. Lord Chaitanya speaks, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that Lord Chaitanya wanted to hear them again and again 100 times, Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. I mean, part of it is because they're these little boys, and they're so innocent. Anyway, it's attractive. The human interest component makes it attractive. But the point, the transcendental points that are embedded within their histories are very instructive. They're relevant to our situations, although, you know, Hiranyakashipu is in a league of his own, category of his own, of demons, and the fault of Uttanapada, you know, pretty extreme, and what Dhruva did is totally extreme. But the principles that are being described in these pastimes in the Bhagavatam, they're very instructive. We take the time, thoughtfully consider, read the purports carefully, contemplate how is Vyasadev, in presenting the Srimad Bhagavatam, helping me to understand what my situation is in the material world and how to return to the spiritual position, how to best return to the spiritual position, how to best be of service to others who have slipped on the path. How can I be of assistance to them? Many important lessons, and therefore the pastimes are particularly famous and attractive and worth hearing again and again and again and again, hundreds of times, very carefully. So I'll end there. See if there's some comments or questions. Yes?
All right. We were just talking yesterday about 24 hours of chanting.
24 hours of chanting.
I mean, I'm just saying, just kind of riding your life, just saying, like, you're on the metro, like, you're on the bus, but you don't want to get, like, people not scared of the Hare Krishna mantra. What is a good way to do that?
When you're on a bus, traveling on a bus, and you want to chant, but you don't want to disturb people,
yeah.
Chant softly.
Okay.
I do it all the time. Not in buses, but in planes, and, you know, standing in line for this and that, and chant softly. Audibly. I mean, audibly enough so that you can, you're not, but just chanting in your in your mind, but softly, softly.
Guruji, I was asked this question about attachment to saintly persons being the pivotal promoting material to spiritual position. And the question was, can that attachment be, material, and can it be...
It can be mixed, for sure. I mean, the attachment can certainly be mixed.
And what's the effect of that?
Huh?
What's the effect of that?
Mixed. I can make offenses and so on. Think in terms of the Srimad Bhagavatam and where there have been mixed contact. Here's one from Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Devananda Pandit, who was an impersonalist speculator scholar, and he recited Srimad Bhagavatam without having the qualification to recite Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the course of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, Shivas Thakur happened to be in the assembly and heard some passages from the Bhagavatam directly and became ecstatic and fell to the ground. And the people who were assisting Devananda Pandit in his ashram thought this person's, we don't know, maybe he's intoxicated or crazy or something, and they picked him up and threw him out. And Shivas didn't take offense, he just went back to Navadvip and thought of Krishna. But Lord Chaitanya, being omniscient, knew that this offense had been made, and he spoke directly with Devananda Pandit on two occasions, chastising him for his offense. Later, just by circumstance, another devotee of Lord Chaitanya was in Kulina Gram, Rakeshwara Pandit, and he was chanting in ecstasy and dancing in ecstasy, and Devananda Pandit had never seen anything like that. So a crowd was forming around him as he was chanting and dancing, and just for hours in ecstatic, not an exhibition of anything, he was just an ecstatic devotee. So he held the crowd back. He did some service so that Rakeshwara Pandit could dance. And then he spent some time with Rakeshwara Pandit, and hearing the illuminating words of Rakeshwara Pandit, he became attracted, and gradually, through Rakeshwara Pandit's association, he became purified. And he started to appreciate who was Lord Chaitanya and what the real message of the Bhagavatam is. And he became somewhat spiritually influenced and transcendentally moved toward the transcendental position. So, you know, initially his understanding of Shivas and quite possibly his understanding of Rakeshwara Pandit was material or mixed. Through association that can change. But one can make an offense and be held responsible for that offense. Not that Srivas took offense, but Lord Chaitanya did. So, one should be careful. One should be careful even in ordinary dealings, but to speak of dealings with a sadhu. One should be careful in ordinary dealings for a devotee, even more than a materialist is careful with ordinary dealings, because it's for Krishna. Anyway. Yes.
Hear the instruction from Narada Muni, like about pure devotional service, but if he had material motivation.
Yes, he had big time material motivation.
So how do we?
Narada, because go back, and Narada understood, because Dhruva told him, the instructions that you've given me about this, you know, Brahminical way of life and being forgiving and don't being attached and all those things. Those are excellent instructions, but I can't follow them. I'm a Kshatriya by spirit. I've been offended. I want to get back. I want a kingdom. But he was very determined, and the object of his, because of his good mother, indicating Lord Vishnu can help you, he was focused on attaining the shelter of Lord Vishnu. So he's giving him this other instruction about transcendence, even after acknowledging he's so attached he can't follow good instruction. He still gave him the good instruction because he wanted Lord Vishnu's association, so he gave him the means. And then this is just like the end of all that dialogue. Is this, he's back at the stage of pure devotional service. 24 hours. Full absorption in one thing. Without, and the end is, without attraction for sense gratification. Now going back, that's what Dhruva wanted. He wanted the kingdom, not just so like I can have a treasury, and I can have a queen, and I can have a big palace, and I can, you know, be on top of the pile. His motivation was Kshatriya spirited. I want to show my stepmother, I want to show my father I'm better. It was that kind of motivation, not a sense gratification, exactly motivation. Subtle sense gratification, satisfying the minds. So he indicated to Dhruva that you won't get Vishnu that way. You're going to have to let that go. But he gave that instruction because he had the qualification. And sure enough, he exhibited the qualification. Later, after the king had again, the association of Dhruva when he returned home. The king became liberated by Dhruva's association, and he went to the forest and followed the example of his son. But his son helped to make him qualified. It's something like, in the case of King Chuchaketu, Angira and Narada didn't right away give transcendental knowledge because he wasn't capable. Or Narada, in the case of King Prachinibari, he didn't right away give him transcendental knowledge. He just told him a story. So we should be discriminating. What's the qualification of the individual? What is it that can help them make another step? What is it they need to take another step? Now, back to your question, in the case of Dhruva, Dhruva was saying, no, I can't follow good instruction. I just want Vishnu. So mixed. In this kind of attachment to Vishnu, he'll become purified. That in and of itself, he'll become purified. So then the instruction, as you become purified, here's what it looks like. Here's how you should live your life. Something else? Yes?
I was thinking of this situation of Dhruva Maharaj in this position. So when
the situation of Dhruva Maharaj, and then what was the rest of what
you said? Sunita's position of bad behavior of his husband, of her husband. Like
Uttanapada, not Dhruva.
Yeah. So I was wondering, like, if she sees the bad behavior and the attitude of her husband towards her son. Like
that's Suniti.
Suniti.
Yeah.
So what is her duty, or like, I was thinking that she has to explain to her husband about his bad attitude and, you know, how it affects.
Am I reading between the lines here with your question? You know, different persons are different. Different persons are different. And Suniti didn't go there. We have no indication, at least, that she shook her finger at her husband and said, "You're nonsense. You know, because of your attachment to your co-wife, look what you've done. You've abandoned me and you've done this to your son. You know, yada, yada, yada." She didn't do that. She didn't do that. So your question is, what is her duty? And it depends.
Whether to say it in a softer way or in a...
It depends. It depends. It depends. Sometimes, and sometimes... Let me, you asked the question, let me finish the answer before you interrupt me. I'm thinking of a situation where recently there was a conversation with someone on a similar topic where the best way to help influence another person who is attached is on the strength of your own detachment and your own Krishna consciousness and your own character and quality. And if to the degree that that person can be helped, to the degree there's some openness to be helped, sometimes just being an example of the message that you might say verbally is the best way to deliver the message. Achar may be better than prachar in some circumstances. In some circumstances, then something may need to be spoken. But your question is, what is duty? And the duty is to understand what will be best for the circumstance. Out of the context of husband-wife relationship, something, a nice lesson that I learned some years ago from Bhurijan Prabhu. We were in Vrindavan together, VIHE. He was, you know, like the person in charge of the VIHE, but everyone, you had other people doing the management. But he was the go-to guy, because it was, you know, he was organizing. So something came up. I can't remember what that something was. It's something that concerned me. So I just let it sit, see if it would resolve itself. It didn't. So one day we were having lunch together and I brought it up. You know, this is something that concerns me. Like, what should I do? What is my duty? What's the right thing in this situation? And he shared, sometimes, the right thing to do is you let Krishna take care, because this is something between an individual and Krishna. I'm not saying all matters, but sometimes it's something that's between the individual and Krishna. And so you let Krishna do Krishna's job, and you do your job. You just serve Krishna. Sometimes that's appropriate. So now go back to the specific question. That's it. All I'm trying to say here is sometimes that's an option. And certainly in a husband-wife relationship, if either the husband or the wife, either one, is in the other one's ear about something, it becomes irritating, you know, like nagging. I'm just want to serve you, Prabhu, and, you know, I'm speaking like this because... So there are times when those things are to be done. There are some times when those things are not to be done. There should be some channel in a wholesome husband-wife relationship where one can say to the other, or the other can say to the one, openly, freely. And it's a good idea if that's... There's a modest amount of common sense of, I don't want to irritate the other party. And there's some points where you reach a shared understanding that this is something that we together both want to work on, so I'll bring it to your attention when it comes up, and I'll do it in a way it's not, please don't take it as nagging, because that's not what it's meant, it's something we've agreed on to work on together. Okay, great. All I'm saying, I don't want to say never bring it. I don't want to say yes or no. It takes some discretion on these things. When it is appropriate, as a matter of duty, to communicate to one's husband or one's wife, this is something that needs some attention. There are times to say, and there are some times to not say. The starting point of consideration is what's going to really be helpful. And that has so many other factors. What's going on, and at that particular time, what are the forces that are acting upon the parties involved, and, you know, and so many things. What's going to be helpful? What's going to make the situation come up? Go ahead. Yeah, but.
How much earlier, telling about this thing, you said sometimes we have to be with the Krishna's side, like let him do his duty. But like as a practical thing, sometimes we do not know the borderline, or you know when we have to do, or like which one, because a lot of things, like a lot of confusion, still we are not in that, you know, with the emotions stuff and like with other things going on. So in that case, do you get help from, or...
What was the punchline of your question? Do we take help from? What's the rest of the sentence?
Like, do you have to get help from, in that situation, from others? Or
that's an option.
Okay. If the person realized that what he did is wrong, something like that. So
there's so many variables, and so it's, you know, to give you a cookie cutter answer when there's so many variables, it's very difficult. If in doubt, hold your tongue. And look within to, you know, what's the indicate, not the modes of nature and the pushings. But, you know, my dear Lord Krishna and my dear spiritual master, and what are the signs that I see from scripture, from the behavior of our acharyas, how my spiritual master might deal with this situation? Think those thoughts. And be clear before you then act or speak. It's the mode of goodness. I call it pause. You're reflective. You're turning inward toward Supersoul, and what about my own contaminations, and what about, what is the standard of purity? What does it mean to be an instrument of the good will of Krishna upon his part and parcel living entity? In this case, a family member that Krishna has entrusted, that we're together and growing back to Godhead together, and I want to be very careful. So, stay in that space for a while till it becomes, there's a clear signal. Not, you know, jump. Better to err on the side of caution. The situation isn't going to likely escalate into something horrific if I take some time in the mode of goodness. It's still going to be there afterwards too. So it's not, you know, something new on the scene. It's something that's been there for some time, probably. So let me be thoughtful. How can I be the best instrument of Krishna in this situation? When there's clarity, then you move with. And yes, one of the things you can do is you can consult someone that's wise and confidential and understands you and so forth. Then, one of the most powerful things out of the toolkit of options is let me become more pure. Let me become an instrument of Krishna just by purity. That's a good one. And that certainly can help bring the situation up. Something else? Okay. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.